Hi, everybody. Bob Claster here, and I'm your host for Funny Stuff, half an hour of comedy that airs every Friday night here on KCRW, this 30-minute workout for your sense of humor. And considering that this is the first Friday night after the Academy Awards track meet, which was on television last Monday night, I think that it is only appropriate that we should listen to stuff having to do with Hollywood, for which we say hooray, and the movies in general, and specific movies, and I don't suppose that's too amorphous a concept to cram into this half hour. So we will hear from such disparate sources as Robert Klein, Danny Kaye, Monty Python, Tom Lehrer, Bob Newhart, all sorts of people, all depending upon how much there's time for. And since record companies don't tell me how long pieces are on the label, we'll just have to see. So anyhow, let us begin with a fairly rarely heard Monty Python piece, because it's only on the album of the soundtrack of the film of Monty Python and the Holy Grail. And it's a takeoff on movie premieres. So without any further ado, let's go to Eric Idle at a movie premiere.
Hello and welcome to Old Compton Street. It's a mild night here, warm for early April, and a large crowd has gathered outside to watch this great gala night for the stars. Cars are arriving quite fast now. Here's a beautiful Rolls-Royce silver Corniche, all white, sliding gracefully up to the doors of the cinema. Commissioner Alf Venables, ex-father of Terry, steps forward, opens the door, and out steps a radiant Miss Taylor herself, looking absolutely stunning in an off-the-shoulder organza and silk dress. And next comes Burt Reynolds in a huge red Ferrari sports car. Oh, my God, Burt Reynolds has run into the back of the Corniche, and Miss Taylor turns and makes a splendid gesture. Great heavens, that's Steve McQueen, whose 18-gear Daytona Special has somersaulted through the air, piled into the back bumper of... And who's this coming through the windscreen of the Mini? Yes, it's lovely star Barbara Streisand, flying through the air in a beautiful Bill Gibb creation. And she's landed half on Roger Moore, looking quite well, and half on Jack Nicholson, who's not so well. And who's that under the back wheel? Yes, it's Faye Dunaway. No, it's Victor Mature in the blazing frock. Yes, all the stars are here tonight. That's Joan Crawford squashed in between the bonnet and Pete Murray and the box office door. And Shirley Temple, her head battered out of all...
Manic Depressive Pictures present... Hello, friends, no goodbye. Produced by Are You Manic and directed by Depressive.
Now you know the name of the picture and you'd like to see it. But no.
Screenplay by Gluck, from a stage play by Motz, from a story by Blip, from a chapter by Ronk, from a sentence by Dopes, from a comma by Stokes, from an idea by Gropes, based on a Joe Miller's jokes.
Now you know the name of the picture and who wrote it, and you'd still like to see it. But no. Art direction, Finkel Puff interiors, Minerva Buff photography, Alonzo Tech recorded sound as Needleback upholstery by Zachary, Knickknackery by Thackeray, Terpsichore by Dickory, and Dickory by Doc.
Now finally at last, comes the picture. And what do we see? The same old beautiful Corvus girls. The opening scene is a ranch in Fresno, California. So what are they singing?
When it's cherry blossom time in Orange, New Jersey, we'll make a peach of a pear. I know we can't elope, so honey, do be mine. And if
up from the gulch rides a hunk of man, he is our hero, Cowboy Dan, a galloping, yodeling buckaroo. His horse, of course, is a baritone, too.
I've got the... Oh, wagon wheels inside of me. I've got that old cactus in the hide of me. I've got that.
The girls are delighted to hear this. But where is our heroine? As the bell rings for lunch, we find our heroine in the corral eating her heart out. She is Mary Sue Ann, tap dancing daughter of an American juggling act who left her on the doorstep of an old English castle where she was found by Sir Basil Metabolism, who said, "By Jove, a girl, baby! I shall raise her as my own daughter," which he did. But she wants to tap dance a cowboy Dan who she met on this trip and was love at first sight, wants to marry her so she can tap dance, but she knows Sir Basil will never permit this. Never, never, never!
That's why she's eating her heart out.
But through her tears, she is singing a happy little song, because she is also a coloratura soprano. She is beside herself. Her favorite position.
Oh, Father, you must let me marry Cowboy Dan. He owns the biggest ranch in Texas, bar none.
Bar none? Why, that's the password of the FBI. It can't be. No, no, yes, yes, no, no, yes, yes, no, no, yes, yes, no, no, yes, yes, it can't be. But it was. He rushes to Mary Sue Ann. "Mary Sue Ann, you must help me out. Can you tap out a message in code? This is her big chance. Now she can tap dance, which she does. But what has she done? She has betrayed her own father. But he isn't her father. He is Heinrich von Schlupen von Rotes Flömen Heidende Glube de Ölske Schmerzen behassen de Ulde Gehölmen de Helmen de Flömen de Geplange de Ölze und Ulmen de Has Knall be de Ölden Grone Ölzen de Halsen Gehöl Elmenine Gehölbe. The dangerous German spy. Stick up your hands, you dirty rat, and cow displayed and eitin' blad. So, the FBI finally captured the German spy. Dan and Mary are about to blend. You think the picture's about to end? But now. Who ever heard of a musical picture without Carmelita Pepita, the Bolivian bombshell? I wish you would come with me to my little village in Bolivia. So peaceful there are the purple mountains with the lovely mist and the shining stars. And the little people who live so simple and quiet. And every night, all they want to do is
grab a partner, swing away, a cherry blossom, prime an orange and jade. Grab her by the teeth and swing her by the hair, and you will make a peach of a pair. Oh, grab!
So here we are back in Fresno, California. And this is where you came in. But do not fret, my friend.
This is a picture that ends in the middle for the benefit of the people who came in the middle. This is the end.
Away there. It seems that most of the songs that you hear these days on the radio, played by the disc jockeys, apart from rock and roll and other children's records, tend to be motion picture title songs. Apparently producers feel that we will not attend their movies unless we have the titles well drilled into our heads in advance. Of course, we don't go anyway, but at least this way they make back on the song some of what they've lost on the picture. But with the rise of the motion picture title song, we have such hits of the past few years as the Ten Commandments Mambo, Brothers Karamazov Cha-Cha, Incredible Shrinking Man, I Love You. I'm sure you're all familiar with these, but a few years ago, a motion picture version appeared of Sophocles' immortal tragedy, Oedipus Rex. This picture played only in the so-called art theaters, and it was not a financial success. And I maintain that the reason it was not a financial success you're way ahead of me was that it did not have a title tune which the people could hum and which would make them actually eager to attend to this particular flick. So I've attempted to supply this, and here then is the prospective title song from Oedipus Rex. From the Bible to the popular song, there's one theme that we find right along. Of all ideals they hail as good, the most sublime is motherhood. There was a man, though, who it seems once carried this ideal to extremes. He loved his mother and she loved him, and yet his story is rather grim. There once lived a man named Oedipus Rex. You may have heard about his odd complex. His name appears in Freud's index, 'cause he loved his mother. His rivals used to say quite a bit that as a monarch he was most unfit, but still in all they had to admit that he loved his mother. Yes, he loved his mother like no other. His daughter was his sister and his son was his brother. One thing on which you can depend is he sure knew who a boy's best friend is. When he found what he had done, he tore his eyes out one by one. A tragic end to a loyal son who loved his mother. So be sweet and kind to mother now and then. Have a chat, buy her candy or some flowers or a brand new hat. But maybe you had better let it go at that. Or you may find yourself with a quite complex, and you may end up like Oedipus. I'd rather marry a duck-billed platypus than end up like old Oedipus Rex.
Babe Ruth's story, you're so bad, really. Babe is such a great character. What a corny rendition. He's up there, sick in the bed, you know, three floors below. Street urchins. Take me out to the ball game. Take me out to the crowd. Ooh. Even ooh-oops, okay? In the middle of the Bronx. Anyway, upstairs. Upstairs, they're hurling baseball metaphors and cliches around like it's gone out of style. You hear those kids, Doc? They're big league. Okay, babe. Father Matthias? What, babe? No one can strike you out. You're Babe Ruth. Thanks, Doc. Sam Levine, his friend. Slide, babe. What the hell is that, babe? Babe? Yeah, Doc. You've got a serum here. Kind of a pinch hitter, you could say. Hey, that's a good idea, Doc. It's never been tried on goslings, is about all so far. But babe, if this works, then millions of people can get their last licks too. Doc? Yes, babe. This pinch hitter. Can he bunt? Babe, the metaphors have possibly been going a little too far now. Bunt. In a way, I suppose he can. But if he catches that third baseman playing a little deep, Doc, let him lay one down, eh? How many outs? Father Matthias, take over here. Not that much into baseball. I'm a doctor.
I was just in Hollywood. They called up. They said, how much would you want to do a picture with Farrah Fawcett? I said, $50,000. They called back. They said, how about $20,000? I said, I'll pay it.
I worked as an accountant for about 2 years in Chicago. I had got a degree in accounting. Went into the Army during the Korean War. Remember that one? And, no benefits. And I have held close to 30 separate accounting jobs in 2 years, which is like 3 weeks at each place. And I found one thing is true, that they always put you through an orientation program. You spend 1 week learning all the problems you're going to have to face in this new job. But invariably, after the week in orientation, The first problem you run into your first day on the job was never covered in any of the sessions. Now, with this kind of prologue, this may seem kind of a jump. My favorite movie is King Kong, the monster movie. This is the greatest monster movie ever made. And the biggest scene, of course, the one you all remember from King Kong, is when King Kong climbs the outside of the Empire State Building. All right, now putting these two thoughts together. This is the night that King Kong climbs the outside of the Empire State Building. It's also the first night on the job for a new guard. This is his first night on the job. He's gone through a week's orientation on the problems he's going to face, and it happens to be the night that King Kong climbs the outside of the Empire State Building. Hello, Mr. Nelson. Yes, this is Sam Hennessy, the new guard. Yeah, sir, I hate to bother you at home like this on my first night, but see, something's come up, sir, and it's not covered in the guard's manual. I looked in the index. Yes, sir. I looked under unauthorized personnel and people without passes and apes and apes' toes. Apes and apes' toes. Yes, sir. There's an ape's toe sticking through the window, sir. Well, see, this isn't your standard ape, sir. He's between 18 and 19 stories high, depending on whether there's a 13th floor or not. Sir, I'm sure there's a rule against apes shaking the building. There is, yes. So I yelled at his feet. You know, I said. I said, a shoe ape, and I'm sorry, but you're going to have to leave, sir. I know how you like the new men to think on their feet, sir. So I went to the broom class, and I got out a broom without signing out a requisition on it. I will tomorrow, yes, sir. And I started hitting him on the toes with it, you see. But it didn't seem to bother him too much. See, there are these planes, sir, and they're flying around him and they're shooting at him, you know, and they only seem to be bothering him a little bit, so I figured I wasn't doing too much good with a broom. Did I try swatting him in the face with it? Well, I was going to take the elevator up to his head, sir. See, but my jurisdiction only extends to his navel. You don't care what I do, just get the ape off the building. This may complicate things a little. He's carrying a woman in his hands, sir. I don't think she works in the building. No, sir. Well, see, as he passed by my floor, she had this kind of negligee on, you know. So I doubt very much if she was one of the cleaning women, you know. Well, sir, the first thing I did, I filled out a report on it. Well, I don't want to give the building a bad name either, sir, you know, but... Well, I doubt very much if we can cover it up, sir. The planes are shooting at them, you know, and people are going to come to work tomorrow morning, and some of them are going to notice the ape in the street, you know. And the broken window, you know, and they'll start putting two and two together. I think we're safe on that score, sir. I doubt very much if he signed the book downstairs.
You don't care what I do, just get the ape off the building. Well, I came up with one idea, sir, but I'm not supposed to leave my post. Well, I thought maybe I could smear the Chrysler building with bananas.
And speaking of the dress industry, you're so nice, I can't resist telling you about two partners. Things are rough. They decide to split. They cut it right down the middle. One stays in the dress industry, the other one goes out to California with what's left of his money. Winds up in the motion picture business. Believe it or not, in a year, he's a fantastic tycoon. Now, his former partner, the dress man, goes to visit with him, walks into a magnificent office, sumptuous. The last word in elegance. His former partner, feet up on the desk, a cigar a mile long. He says, "You look to me like a big shot in pictures." He says, "You got him tootin'. I only make epics." "If the picture not gonna cost me $100 million, I don't start up with it. I use maybe 100,000 extras a day." She says, "100,000 extras? What can it be?" "Well," he says, "I make vestons. I use maybe 50,000 Indians, 50,000 cowboys." "Cowboys." He says, "How much you pay him a day?" He says, "$100 a day." He said, "You're a cock a liar." Well, I said, "Honest to God. $100 a day, 100,000 extras. How could you afford it?" He says, "We use real bullets."
And now, a message for the patrons of this theater from the president of the NAAAA, the National Association for the Advancement of Afro-Americans, Dr. George Stevens.
"Hello. I've just been reading a very important motion picture script, which has already been filmed. Why am I reading the script when I could be watching the movie? Simply because I feel this film is of great importance, not just to the Afro-American community, but to all Negroes. For this is the first motion picture, to our lawyer's knowledge, that has dared to be suggested by the life of the late Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr. It serves as a living testimonial to the dignity of man and to the beauty of his woman. I have never before been asked to endorse a motion picture, and so it is with deep pride and humility that I urge you to owe it to yourself to undergo this uplifting cinematic experience."
He's back.
He's bad.
He's black.
He's glad.
He's Kingpin.
Black Ivory Productions presents a Zodiac International release.
Kingpin.
He's a king. He's a pin. He's a kingpin.
Introducing Denver Devereaux Jr., 8th round draft pick of the New York Jets in his motion picture debut, is Kingpin.
And he's got a plan to stick it to the Klan.
"Sorry, fella, but you gotta get to the back on this bus."
"Listen, you honky donkey, nobody tells Kingpin to get back."
I thought you were nonviolent, Kingpin.
"Sure, man. Only when I'm dreaming."
"Got a dream, got the steam to be Kingpin."
They call him the Doctor, and he's got a special treatment for Whitey's four-wheel jive.
If anybody's gonna be called Mr. Charlie, it's gonna be Kingpin.
"You can't muscle me out of this, Kingpin. This is the biggest march Washington has ever seen."
"Dig this and dig it deep, Congressman Muldoon. If there's gonna be snow in Washington, it's gonna be black snow. Now you take your business elsewhere, white boy."
"Oh, this would be a heck of a time for my feet to desert me."
"Gonna get out of this scene? When are we gonna go away to the mountains? Just the two of us.
The man won't let me, honey. I'm in too deep.
Forget the man. Think about your woman.
Oh, boy.
Ain't no bluff, not the stuff to be kingpin.
If you want to get it together and see the brother who predicted the weather, dress your mother up in leather and see Kingpin.
The critics agree.
It's bad.
I would use a little different closing music because of today's theme. We started out with Monty Python from the Holy Grail album with a piece about movie premieres, and then Danny Kaye with a tune called The Lobby Number, which I believe was written by his wife, Sylvia Fine, and I believe is from a movie called Up in Arms, but I believe some strange things. I could be wrong about both counts. Oedipus Rex, followed by Tom Lehrer, and then Robert Klein talking about the Babe Ruth story, Henny Youngman talking about Farrah Fawcett, Bob Newhart talking about King Kong, Myron Cohen talking about the movie business, and The Credibility Gap featuring our own Harry Shearer, who is currently featured in a program here on this station, which has no name at the moment. And so if you tune into it on Sunday mornings at 10, you might give Harry a call and let him know what you think he ought to call the program. At any rate, that's going to do it for this week's program. Next week's program, we're going to be listening to taped highlights from the 5th Annual Golden Raspberry Award Foundation Razzie Awards, where they give out awards for the worst performances in movies, and so we will be carrying the film motif one more week. And it was a lot of fun. I think you'll enjoy it to see what the worst films and the worst performances were of 1984. So that's going to do it for this week's edition of Funny Stuff. This is your host, Bob Claster, thanking you for listening, reminding you to always keep that sense of humor well exercised. Have a good weekend, everybody.
Hooray for Hollywood. Gooey, bally, hooly, Hollywood, where any office boy or young mechanic can be a panic with just a good-looking pan.
And any shop girl can be a top girl if she pleases the tired businessman.
Hooray for Hollywood! You may be homely in your neighborhood.
To be an actor, see Mr. Factor, you make your kisser look good.
Go out and try your luck, you may be Donald Duck. Hooray for Hollywood!
Hooray for Hollywood!
They hire fellas whose physiques are good, and then they tell them they're the perfect shape men to act like ape men, and they convince them they should. They make them grunt and yell, oh,
and people think they're swell.
Oh,
hooray for Hollywood,
it's really got me. Oh,